Okay. Go ahead and be turning, if you would, to 1 Timothy chapter 3. That's the section that we've been looking at, of course, in our study of 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 3. And quite a bit, several of these things we've talked about regarding these qualifications or qualities or however you want to look at that, because many of them are very similar to the things that are mentioned regarding the qualities that shepherds are to have as far as some of the family qualifications, domestic qualifications, and things like that. So there would be no need for us to go barreling off into that again because we've dealt with it. Just try to keep some of those things in mind. I mentioned to you, it is interesting that for the most part among our brethren, and I understand the work of shepherds is more of an overseeing position as pastors of the flock. But it does seem like some of the questions that people have about the qualifications of elders, they don't seem to ask those same questions about the qualifications of deacons. And many of these statements are so very, very similar. It's interesting to me that that is the case, but nonetheless it is. But if you'll notice, when we've talked about the qualities of a man who is to serve as a deacon, there in verse 8, let's just get this in our mind again after he mentions the qualities of shepherds. And of course, Titus 1 has a parallel text as far as shepherds are concerned. And we'll talk a little bit more about technical versus non-technical usage of the idea of a deacon. But let's just read together. 1 Timothy chapter 3, beginning in verse 8. Deacons likewise must be men of dignity, not double-tongued, or addicted to much wine, or fond of sordid gain, but holding to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. These men must also first be tested. Then let them serve as deacons if they are beyond reproach. Women must likewise be dignified, not malicious gossips, but temperate, faithful in all things. Deacons must be husbands of one wife and good managers of their children and their own households. Verse 13. For those who have served well as deacons obtain for themselves a high standing and great confidence in the faith that is in Christ Jesus. I want to touch on a few of these things that maybe we haven't spent so much time on. But when you think about what he says regarding deacons, and this is similar to the kind of things we read regarding elders, but he mentions not being fond of sordid gain there in the New American Standard. How does the King James render that? Okay, yeah, greedy of filth. That just sounds bad, doesn't it? Greedy of filthy lucre. Okay, what does that mean, though? Yeah, very materialistic, driven, more concerned about financial prosperity and bringing that to themselves than they would be about the work of the Lord. So that, I think, is a very good question. Also, there's the sense of, I think, implied in that this may be somebody who's been unethical in their business practices with others. I've known of situations with elders and deacons where, you know, some big local congregational problem happens over some business deal that's gone bad. That would reflect on character and owing one another and that kind of thing. What were you going to say there? It is interesting, and I would have to, I don't have my Greek Testament here that I could look at, but the New American Standard is in the middle between the King James and New King James, because the way it renders it, and it tends sometimes to be hyper-literal in its translation, it says there in verse 8, fond of sordid gain. So it does. Now, there is a sense. What motivates that? What would motivate somebody to be that way? Well, it's going to be somebody who is materialistically minded, somebody who has, you know, the passage that Paul mentions about the love of money is the root of all evil. It just seems to me, generally speaking, that what he's describing is somebody who has an unrighteous materialism about him, just generally speaking, and the idea of the love of money, not just having money, but the love of money being the root of all evil. It seems to me that's what Paul's getting into as far as their character. What do you got? Oh, see. That I think it's more than just, yeah, greed is bad, okay, that obviously, but it just seems to me in the reading of it is Paul is getting to the notion of we can see this person. How would you know somebody is greedy for money, though? I mean, how would you be? God knows, but how would we know? Okay, how they talk, but what else? What does the text seem to indicate? What they do, how they treat other people, what their business practices are, maybe, or what their financial practices have been regarding other people, and maybe taking advantage of other people. I just think, generally speaking, he's saying that kind of person has not demonstrated the character and integrity. This is about integrity and how you deal with somebody. Okay, so I just think that's this general notion of taking advantage is not the spirit of Christ and is not what God would have us to be. Go ahead, what'd you got? Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, but there's other things that are. I know what you're saying, Orvin, but that's right. However, I know some people that have been appointed to be deacons and elders that.
But they seem like they're right with God, but really, truly, they're not.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're doing what you're saying they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You're right. Yeah, there might be more things to deal with than just whether or not he becomes a deacon. It almost does seem like, though, that he's drawing boundary markers here. I mean, that's what the text says. The text says there regarding the kind of man that would serve in this capacity. He says someone who is not fond of sordid gain. And there are a few other things that are mentioned here that wouldn't be good for a Christian to be or do either. But he's trying to get to, you know, the qualities of this man that would serve as a special servant. Go ahead, Dino. Yeah. I know. I know what everybody knows what Dino's talking about. Go ahead. Exactly. Yeah. And so there's. We could go through a lot of stories you probably have heard, Betsy. That's right. And if you're, yeah, I'll just leave that there, but that's a good point. That's a good point. I think he is getting to, which everybody's been mentioning, what motivates him. You know, what was the driving motivation? And you have to have some kind of objective way of looking at some of that. And I think taking advantage of others, being driven by material things, that being more important than spiritual things, that may go to part of what Orvin was saying. That reflects something that's going to cause a problem. Okay. All right. So that was one thing I wanted to. I was trying to go back through some of the unique things in the text. We mentioned him being double-tongued and not addicted to much wine. Notice verse 9. We might talk a little bit about this. He says, "But holding to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience." First of all, what's he talking about would be question one. Question two is, how do we figure that out? So question one, what does this even mean? What do you guys think? Verse 16? Yes, that's right. That's in the text. Verse 16 mentions the mystery of godliness. He who was revealed in the flesh, or God was manifest in the flesh, vindicated in the spirit, seen by angels. Yeah. Okay, do you want to go further with that? So the mystery of the faith that he's talking about is defined in the context, is what you're saying.
Generally, that's thought to be how God is going to reconcile all nations.
Right. So we know his faith in Christ would be involved. And I would say, you know, when we think about the mystery of the faith, this is the faith. This is the system of understanding that had been delivered by the apostles. It's the truth. But the other part of that, about holding that, when you think of holding, what does that indicate? I know this thing's fundamental, but it's still important. If you're holding, remember, Paul has encouraged Timothy to do some of the very things that he tells Timothy to deal with the deacons. So what does it mean to hold? Yeah. Continue in it. Remember 1 Timothy 1. Let's go back to 1 Timothy chapter 1. Look at some of the, you know, just the language there that he uses regarding his need to stand against these false teachings that were going on and hold on to the faith. Some have made shipwreck of that. And later on in 2 Timothy chapter 1, he's going to say to him, in verse 13, "Retain the standard of sound words which you have heard from me in the faith and love which are in Christ Jesus." So the faith has been defined as the revelation about Christ, but the revelation coming from Christ. Okay, and so he says, this needs to be a man that's sound in the faith. He's not vacillating here and there regarding the faith. So he is a man that is sound in the faith. And we should be able to know that. He should have a clear conscience. When you think of a clear conscience, what does that mean to you? Anybody? Okay. Right, that's right. I was thinking of 2 Timothy 1:3 to go along. But some of these things that he mentions regarding deacons is not just for deacons. It's for anyone that is a faithful Christian. So before you appoint a man as a deacon, before you appoint someone as a shepherd, we ask, are they sound? Do they have a healthy faith? Do they have a good balance in their spiritual life? And so when you look at 2 Timothy 1, even notice what he says here. Verse 3, "I thank God whom I serve," Paul says he did this, "I thank God whom I serve with a clear conscience, the way my forefathers did, as I constantly remember you in my prayers." So there, what does Paul mean when he says, "I serve God with a clear conscience"? I don't have a stained conscience. I'm not being a hypocrite. I'm sincere. He has a sincere conscience. And so someone who's leading a double life, in other words, doesn't need to be a deacon, doesn't need to be a shepherd. Okay, somebody, the double tongue thing, somebody who says one thing to you and something else to you. Those are things we have to take into consideration as far as what they're going to be doing in the work of the Lord's church. Okay, so it makes sense that that's one of the qualities that he actually suggests here when you look at 1 Timothy chapter 3. Okay, any comments or questions about that? Go ahead. That's the notion of sincerity and genuineness of faith. And this is a person that's trustworthy and dependable, and they know the truth, and they strive to live by the truth. Okay. Paul, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Mm-mm. That's a good point. So, that's a great point. That's a great point. What did he say? Was it, I think it's Acts 23 when he's giving this defense. He said everything he had done in what? In all good conscience. Yeah. And so, now that helps us understand how the conscience works too, because what were some of the things he had done when he makes this defense? Even when he was what? Persecuting Christians. But he believed it was the right thing to do. So your conscience doesn't determine truth. But if it's educated by the truth, it does you good. And so when he learned better, he changed. But the real thing here with this statement regarding deacons is that they're sincere men. They're living in good conscience. It's not a double life, and that's a good point. Paul well understood that, and it seems that he had that view of Timothy as well. He had a lot of confidence in Timothy. When you read Philippians 2, for instance, he mentions he didn't have anybody else quite like Timothy that he could trust that way with the work of the Lord. Okay, some of the others the beginning of verse 10, these men must also first be tested. What is that? Yeah, well, okay, yeah, we know that with shepherds, don't we?
You also have to have men be Christian for a period of time because
that's right. Right. That's right. I think the implication here is this isn't somebody you don't know well enough to know if they have these qualities. Okay? And it takes a little bit of time to know those sorts of things. And so he mentions that. Verse 12, deacons must be the husbands of one wife and good managers of their children and their own households. Then verse 13. For those who have served well as deacons obtain for themselves a high standing and great confidence in the faith that is in Christ Jesus. Okay, let's break that one down a little bit. It's almost as if he's saying, this work is really a good work. I mean, this is something that's good for the church, it's good for them. But what's he seem to be saying, do you think? Right. If he serves well as a deacon, and he has these qualities, and we see his faithfulness on display in a way as he serves with humility, that's a good thing. And that's not only encouraging to him, but it's encouraging to the church as well. And it reveals a lot about his character. And so it's also emphasizing, I think, he needs to take seriously this work if he is appointed as a deacon. And he mentions obtain for themselves a high standing and great confidence in the faith that is in Christ Jesus. And so that's the sphere in which he is serving and he is working. Okay. Any questions or comments about it? Go ahead, Kelton. I'll have to think about that. Maybe both.